Welcome back into The Drive. My name is Carrington Harrison. Very happy to be here. Coming up at the top of the 4 o'clock hour, we are going to be joined by Mark Sharp. He is a state representative for Missouri. Yesterday, we had a Kansas rep on the show. Today, we will get the Missouri side of the stadium pursuit. Let's head to the phone lines right now. Speaking of the Royals, to be joined by our Royals insider, Josh Vernier. Vern, how you doing, my man?
I'm doing very well. How are you?
I'm doing great. Vern, did you get one of those replica 2015 rings? I got one. I was actually surprised at the quality. It's a very sturdy replica.
I would say for the last, and maybe it aligns with, it's going to sound like I'm kissing up. Maybe it aligns with John Sherman taking over, but, you know, they partnered with Charlie Hustle, right, for all the t-shirt giveaways. The quality of most of their stuff nowadays, even the, I forgot how you describe the hats, but the hats with the little flaps that come down over the ears, even those, high quality, man. It pays to show up to Kauffman Stadium.
It absolutely does. Let's talk about this weekend, and then we'll transition to talking about Jack, and then we'll talk about the team in the series against the Giants. What was it like to be in the middle of this weekend? I got a chance to go out there Saturday and Sunday, and more specifically on Saturday. It was just really cool to see so many of the players on the field together, and the way that they did the highlights, where they were just taking you through the season and you were just reliving so many moments and memories, things that you forgot about, players that you had forgotten, hadn't seen in a long time. I thought it was really well done. You had a front row seat to everything that happened this weekend. What was it like?
Yeah, it was very enjoyable. It doesn't feel like 10 years, so to me, it wasn't the trip down memory lane that it may have been for others that have a more exciting life. But for me, when it's Royals baseball year in and year out, no, that 2015 team is mentioned on basically every single postgame show for the last decade. So, you know, it's nice to see them together because it reminds you of one of the reasons why you love that team. Now, the reason why you loved 15 is because they won, of course, but you also loved them because you had been watching them for nearly half a decade. A lot of them, right? You knew the inside jokes. You knew the relationships. You know who were the best friends, even though they all appeared to be friends. And, you know, all those things were on display, even though 10 years have gone by. Like we all know, if you get together with your high school buddies, your college buddies, it doesn't take long until you're right back in those familiar roles. And it was clear, even as a fan, as a media member, it was clear that everybody locked back into those familiar roles that they played back in 2015.
I had never thought this until this weekend, and you can tell me if I'm off on this. I came away this weekend thinking Moose might actually be the most popular one in this group. It was different whenever Moose spoke, whenever they showed Moose highlights. Maybe it's because he has a call that Hosmer doesn't have, or Salvi, or Gordon doesn't have. But just, it is funny to think about how this run started and the feeling about Mike Moustakas. Like, there was a time that he was MJ Melendez, for now him to have a retirement ceremony coming up in 2 weeks, for him to be one of the more celebrated players from that era. You want to talk about coming full circle, he might completely embody that.
Yeah. I don't know if he's the favorite because, again, and we've talked about this, that's another aspect of that ball club that was so much fun, is there wasn't the Bobby Witt Jr. Everyone had a favorite Royal, from a starter to even bench players to bullpen guys to starting pitchers. Everyone had a small fan base. I mean, even Terrence Gore, you heard the ovation he got on Saturday. That team was beloved and always will be. But yeah, I mean, the story, when you win a title, is always the title. You know, you don't talk about Mike Moustakas hitting 211 in 2014. You don't talk about how the contract turned out for Alex Gordon, or how the career ended for Eric Hosmer, or the health concerns early in Lorenzo Cain's career. No, you just remember they're champions, soon-to-be Royals Hall of Famers, and forever legends in Kansas City.
It was really cool to see the interaction between the 85 team and the 15 team, and the fact that so many of them are still around. And even on the 15 team, there are still like fingerprints on them. George Brett played a very instrumental role in 15 and the success. Willie Wilson was still around. So many of those great players. What was really cool with the Thursday event that they had down at Union Station was seeing the relationship between the 85 and 15 teams.
to me, watching the 85 team on Friday just made me feel old in that, you know, when I look at the 2015 guys, I view them the same way that my nephew views the 2025 team, the same way that our uncles viewed the 1985 team, right? The boys of summer, the guys that lay it all out there on the line, you know, having the time of their lives. You know, you watch those highlight packages, and not only do you remember the great moments, but you see the smiles and the celebrations and the post-game celebrations and the, you know, trials and tribulations that those 25, 26 guys go through together. And it's always the same. You know, every championship team, even teams that fall short, they all go through that. They all think it's never going to end. It's all the pinnacle of their professional lives, and it's over in a blink. And suddenly it's 40 years later, and a few of you are getting wheeled out, and you're all bald, and, well, except for George, but the rest of them are all bald. And it just puts into perspective, you know, with your grandfather and your father and yourself and your sons and your daughters, it's, baseball is life, man, and it, for as much as we want to think we're going to be around and it's going to be around forever, it's all gone in the blink of an eye.
I think one thing that watching that highlight video showed me, and we've talked about it before, but it just came up as I was watching it, is, man, those two teams just have so many what ifs. Like, there was so many times in that story where the story just could have abruptly ended. Like, I'm sitting there at the wild card game. I never thought I would get a chance to go to a Royals postseason game. So much hope, so much excitement. And then that deflating feeling of a big home run being, and just like, oh, well, I guess it's over. And then little by little, the Royals start to come back. They highlighted the Carlos Correa error. And the Royals, who had just run through the season, wait, they're down four heading into the eighth inning. The story can't end this way. I think kind of going down this trip down memory lane, I think I just kind of realized, man, there were so many opportunities for this story to not end the way that I wanted it to. And just everything that could go right for the Royals basically did for like 18 months.
Yeah, same in 1985, right? They're down 3-1 to the Jays in the ALCS, and George goes crazy. They're down 3-1 to the Cardinals in the World Series, and Jack Clark doesn't catch a foul ball, and there's a wild pitch, and then, of course, the missed call at first base. And, yeah, so many instances to where they don't make it to the World Series in 85. They don't win the World Series in 85, and could you imagine you know, George's legacy, what this franchise, if this franchise would still be in Kansas City, if not for that 85 team. No, and that's a perfect example of why, when it's May 20th and your baseball team has, what, the second most wins in the American League, sure, we could nitpick, we can point out certain aspects that we hope improve over the course of the final 113 games. But it's a pretty good spot to be in where we're at right now in 25.
Right now, we're talking to our Royals insider, Josh Vernier, here. We just recapped this celebration this past weekend between the 1985 and the 2015 team. A great celebration out at Kauffman. I also thought the crowd was very much into it. Even though there were a lot of Cardinals fans on Saturday, that's certainly a fan base that understands history, appreciates history, and I thought they were into it, and it was just fun to see Kauffman Stadium so fired up on Saturday. I know the game didn't live up to it, but it was a great crowd, and I'm not really sure if you can be upset by the turnout that we saw this past weekend at Kauffman.
No, very happy, and it's always very picturesque, even though I know the Cardinals are detestable and all of that, but the red, white, and blue at Kauffman Stadium, it was a very nice weekend aesthetically, but yeah, on the diamond, you were hoping that would have been a little bit more successful.
Let's talk about Jack Caglione here. He got called up to AAA Omaha. What's your biggest takeaway? What was your impression when you saw the tweet that the Royals had made the decision to move him up?
I thought of Ned Yost, right? Because it was a week ago that I was on with Fesco and Dusty, and I thought, yeah, it appeared to me, and again, I'm not watching every pitch, I'm not diving into double-A baseball, I'm looking at the box scores, I'm watching recaps, but it's nothing all that's, you know, strenuous. But it appeared to me that the challenge was no longer there for Jack, and I, you know, think of Dayton Moore always talking about you can only grow as your competition grows, but then I thought of Ned Yost. He always says, or said, You know, whenever I'm thinking about making a move, I wait a week and then possibly make that move. And that's exactly what the front office did. Maybe it was apparent that Jack was ready a week ago, but JJ and many of the front office make that trip down there. They get their eyes on Jack, and they confirm what they were reading in the reports, and Jack gets the bump up to AAA. Again, this is what we talked about back in spring training. So far, it's been best-case scenario with Jack Caglione. Go to AA, dominate, and get bumped up to AAA before the calendar flips to June. He's done it. Now, next up is go dominate AAA, ideally for a couple of months, and then join a team that is red hot, an offense that is consistent, and a team that is steamrolling towards October. So two more steps to go, but so far, everything you could have hoped for the 22-year-old has come to fruition.
I thought the Royals were going to slow play this a little bit. Are you surprised by how quickly this is moving? I mean, we're talking about a player who played less than 2 months in AA. Now, I certainly understand their logic. He was incredible down in AA. He hit .322. He had almost a .400 on base percentage. He led in RBIs. So I certainly get why they are doing this. I'm just surprised for an organization that usually kind of slow plays these things. That doesn't seem like that's the case here with this prospect.
Well, I do think it's a different game, and of course, the organization that you're referring to, yes, had J.J. Piccolo in it, but that, you know, that was more of the, right, Dayton Moore is the one that held back Bobby Witt Jr. You could make a case that Bobby could have been in the big leagues a year before. I know Dayton struggled with that decision of whether or not to have Bobby take all of those steps and go through the normal minor league progression. No, I'm not surprised. And once you saw Jack start to moonlight in the outfield, five starts in right, he's made a start in left field as well. Once you saw that, you knew that the Royals are thinking about 2025 with Caglione. That's what I'm most interested in when the lineup comes out in a few hours and how they handle him for the first few weeks. Is it predominantly in the outfield? Because Jack Caglione playing first base at AAA, being that close to the big leagues, him playing first base really doesn't do all that much for the big league club. To me, he's a right fielder. He's a left fielder. He's a guy that's knocking on the door and looking, should have Hunter Renfroe looking over his shoulder.
Yeah, I mean, at this point, to me, I'm 100% with you. If you're going to do this move, and we're talking about Jack Caglione joining this team, let's just pick August 1st as a random date, you got to be thinking about where he can potentially play, and offensively, if he continues to do in Omaha what he was doing in Northwest Arkansas, then you're going to have to make room for him. The only place that makes sense to me is one of those corner outfielders. What I want this team to do is, if you were telling me that the plan is around July 31st is, they go make a move for a bat and they bring up Jack Caglione, that's a really good improvement for this offense, and hopefully you are heading in the right direction with this offense.
Yeah, and ideally, when Cags gets that call, it's not an offense that is desperate for that trade acquisition and the emergence of Caglione. Ideally, he debuts hitting in the seventh spot and eventually climbs his way up, you know, up to the five spot, the four spot, depending on who you bring in. And I heard you talk to Denny about it yesterday, you know, you cannot ask a 35-year-old catcher to be your cleanup hitter if you're going to win the division, not in the second half of the season. You know, Salvi's going to be able to turn it around, I believe, offensively. But come those brutal summer days of July, August, and September, if you're going to have him behind the dish, you can't ask him to be who he was last year, who he's been for half a decade now. You have to expect some decline offensively if you're going to put him behind the dish. And again, that's another reason why really no reason for Caglione to be playing first base all that often. Now, occasionally, fine, but nightly, no, because Salvi's a first baseman at DH in the second half of the season. Vinny's a first baseman DH in the second half of the season. You don't need another one.
We got breaking news right now in the NFL. NFL owners have approved for NFL players to participate in flag football in the upcoming Olympics in 2028. NFL players have been allowed to play in the Olympics. We'll figure out more of the information. The Olympics in 2028 will be from July 14th through July 30th in Los Angeles. NFL owners have approved it. I'm sure there are some provisions. Once we find those out, we'll certainly share them with you. Patrick Mahomes has actually expressed that he would be interested in playing in flag football in the Olympics. We'll talk about that more once we get done with Vern. Vern, let's get back to the Royals here. It sounds like you're not worried about Salvador Perez.
Not more concerned than what I just said, right? I don't think you can ask him to drive the bus like you'll need a cleanup hitter to drive the bus to win a division. I don't think you can ask that of him when the calendar gets to July, when we get to the second half of the season. I mean, I could dive into some of the advanced metrics or the expected numbers. You look at the expected batting average and on-base percentage and the expected slugging percentage for Salvi. He's run into a lot of tough luck this season. I know nobody likes to hear that. They roll their eyes at it. But Salvi's track record coupled with those numbers that say his exit velo, his barrels, should equate to much better numbers. And I'm talking a lot better, right? He's hitting 218. He has an expected batting average of 290. He has an OPS of 578. An expected OPS of 866. So that coupled with him being a future Hall of Famer, if anybody's going to turn it around, I believe in the captain.
The only thing I would say, and this is me pushing back a little bit because you heard what I said yesterday. If Denny says that he's going to give it until June 20th, I will give it until June 20th. Usually, I would say that fans are the last ones to acknowledge when a player is declining. Like, the decline, it appears, if we're just looking at the raw numbers, is happening right before our eyes, and we all love Salvi. We all feel the same way about him. But, I mean, it is a noticeable decline from where he was last season and where he's been these last handful of years. And I think you and I agree on this. Yes, Hunter Renfro is a problem. Yes, MJ Melendez was a problem. One of the problems with the Royals offense is they were counting on getting a productive version of Salvador Perez, and that just really hasn't happened so far this season.
Well, it hasn't happened in May, right? He's hitting below 200 since the calendar flipped to May. In the second half of April, though, you know, his numbers were well above league average. So, you know, we're not even 50 games into the season. He's had a decent start, a good stretch, and now a bad stretch. And again, those advanced numbers would tell you that things are going to turn around for Salvi. So, eventually it's going to end. I don't believe it's right now, but who knows? Like you're saying, eventually, sure. It certainly will end, but there's just too many reasons for patience with Salvi, both tangible and intangible.
Right now, we're talking to our Royals insider, Josh Vern. You're joining us on the show. Vern, is there a chance that Chris Bubich makes the All-Star team?
Yeah, no doubt. I would say right now, Bobby Bubich and Lucas Ursek would be my three selections. Michael Wacha has a really good case, but I'll go with those three. I'll say right now it's Bubich, Bobby, and Lucas Ursek.
I left Saturday really, really impressed with Noah Cameron. I could easily see how a young player in the middle of all of that, you're from St. Joe, you're making a start at Kauffman, packed house, the Cardinals are in town. Like, I could see how the moment could take over there. Noah Cameron looked like a guy that's been doing this for 8-9 years. He's not really a prospect that we spent a lot of time talking about over the last couple of years, but I find it hard to believe that the Royals got a lot better prospects in their minor league system than what we've seen from Cameron in his first two starts.
Well, at 25, you're not, well, to have that little of big league experience, the scenario that you paint and you can throw on top of it, you're throwing to Salvi and you're pitching in front of a 2015 Royals club that you, as a 16-year-old, cheered on and fell in love with. Yeah, it's got to be overwhelming. But the thing that stuck out to me this spring about Noah Cameron, and talked about it on those Hot Stove shows, was how composed he was, how professional he was, both in demeanor and also eye test-wise. The command to throw four or five different pitches to all four quadrants, very Chris Bubich-like in the way that he can keep hitters off balance with stuff that isn't necessarily overpowering. And then just the eye test. I mean, he's got a man's body out there. Now he's 25. I'm not going to act like he's a kid. But for a rookie, two starts into a season, yeah, you can certainly dream on a lefty with command like that, 6 years of control to go along with Chris Bubich and Cole Reagans and some other very nice pieces that are down on the farm right now. You feel good about this organization top to bottom. Not only at the big league level do you have a team with 27 wins, again, the second most in the junior circuit, but you have a top 10 prospect that is always being promoted by the league, right? You see it on social media. Major League Baseball loves Jack Caglione. They cannot wait for this dude to get to the show. He is going to be everywhere. That coupled with a pitching department that now it appears can draft and develop, this is how you win consistently in a market like this. Kudos to the front office. Kudos to ownership.
Have you ever been to San Francisco Stadium?
Yeah, for the 2014 World Series.
Yep. Oh, yeah, okay, my bad. No, that was a silly question now in hindsight. No, it was a long time ago. I got a chance to go out there last year. One of my really good friends lives in San Francisco. I got a chance to see the stadium. Absolutely beautiful stadium. I mean, one of the cool things about baseball, it's very obvious, but just how unique every stadium is and how the experience in every stadium is just totally different. But, like, to walk back there, see McCovey Cove, know that Barry Bonds used to hit home runs here, a really, really cool park.
And you don't have to go into the ballpark to take pictures with that Willie Mays statue, who was my favorite player, always will be my favorite player. That was my main attraction when I went out there, was to see the Say Hey Kid. But again, that was 11 years ago. I know San Francisco is a lot different than it was 11 years ago, because back when I'm going out there, the Warriors were just starting. I would imagine that basketball team has certainly changed the landscape of the downtown.
Yeah, and they also are in a new stadium since the last time you were down there, too. It's in downtown San Francisco. Last question I'll get you out of here, Vern. Norm from Cheers has just recently passed away. RIP to him. You and I are around the same age that we didn't grow up with the 80s shows the way that we did with the 90s shows, but there was definitely an 80s show that you liked. Like, I like Golden Girls. I can't really explain what it was, but you know how it is. You would just watch the news, and then after the news, there would just be this 80s show. You just end up watching like, oh, this show's kind of funny. What was your 80s show?
Yeah, Golden Girls is good. Cheers, I'm glad you didn't have a question, because I never truly dove in on that. Is the Cosby Show a cop out? Because yeah, that was, or does that count as an 80s show?
Yeah, definitely, 100%.
Yeah, well then the Cosby Show would be my answer.
Is it still the answer with everything now? Like, I feel like now you got to completely move away from everything Cosby.
No, I mean, yeah, he's a scumbag, obviously, and it broke everybody's heart, and you feel horrible for the victims. But no, that was the show, man. Yeah, of course, that's what I was watching. Cliff Huxtable, who didn't love that show? Get real.
You want me to ask you a question about the stadium, or you just want to end our interview?
I don't know anything. I don't follow it.
That is our guy.
You're doing a great job, though. I know that.
No, that is our guy, John. I just had to ask you. Like, maybe you're like, man, I got thoughts. Nobody ever asked me about the stadium. I just wanted to give you the chance.
Just tell me where to go.